I Tell Stories is brought to you by Somewhere, Cannabis Dispensary, Portland, Oregon, Hillock Supply, and people like you.
It was all I could think about. Bottles of rum we drinking now. Get off my stool, I'm thinking how my brethren next to me sinking scowls. Pass that shit with a winking smile. Marijuana, huge stinking pal. Muskets and sabers could drink them now. Background piano with a blinking style. Friends with Benjamin, but we some veterans. And if you got a scheme, we consider bring after them pieces, after them dividends. Trying to rise from the seasons we living in.
Look into my eyes, mesmerized by my eyes. Oh no, there was this thing I seen, and this guy who's from like the 40s or something like that, some Indian gentleman, and that was the thing. You just look into his eyes and you just listen to the music.
So didn't like Liberace steal that routine kind of too or something?
Yeah. Yes, he did.
We're talking about Corey LePandit then.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh, you know? Okay, cool. Hey, you know what? That means you're legit. Now I know why I'm friends with you for sure, because if you ain't heard,
I know that Corey LePandit was a pianist born to a Brahmin priest father and a mother who is a French opera singer in New Delhi, India.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, yep. I heard that too. Yes.
And yeah, it started in the 40s, but by the 50s, Panin had captivated national audiences with his incredible skills on the keyboard and dazzling compositions on the Hammond D3 organ.
Oh my goodness, yes. That is not a joke. I actually been bumping some Corey LePandit. I won't even lie. He's in the I Tell Stories playlist currently. One of the tracks that I was really into was The Hypnotist. That's what, you know, that's kind of where that came from. And then he had one that was like the Mughal something or other that I really liked. They're all really, it's like now they label it like Obscura, I guess. But, you know, if you think about it back then, and I watched some videos of him playing, and he's playing with his left and right hand, two different instruments, and just killing it, man. And he's looking in the camera, looking at the ladies. There's a lot of things that I read that there were girls of this era that they were like, he was my first crush. This exotic man from India. New Delhi, you say. A governor,
yes.
Said, right? Wasn't it or something? And yeah, you said. Opera singer was. So he was born into music, I guess, guys.
Yeah. He wound up appearing on 900 episodes of Corey LePandit's Adventures in Music on local Los Angeles television.
What?
He was always sharply dressed in a suit and tie or a silk Nehru jacket and sported a turban complete with a sparkly gemstone.
Okay.
Americans were enthralled by this mysterious spiritual music man from the Far East. And offstage, Corey lived a Hollywood lifestyle, literally, with a gorgeous blonde wife, a house in the Hollywood Hills. Known as the godfather of exotica, he rubbed shoulders with stars of the day, such as Bob Hope and Errol Flynn.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I read something that said that he started one of his first groups he was with when he first went to Hollywood. He played with Roy Rogers' faux hillbilly group Sons of the Pioneers under the name Cactus Pandit. A little bit later on, he obviously switched up. By 1948, he was playing the Novichord on a revival of the 30s radio drama Chandu the Magician. Chandu the Magician, guys. I don't know. You try it out. It's Chandu. So whatever.
That sounds right to me, man. Yeah,
I was thinking it'd be like Chandu or Chan. I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, guy's pretty amazing. He definitely has... There's a lot of stories around good old Corey LePandit, my friend. I don't even know where to begin on this guy, to be honest. And the fact that if you think about what you were just saying, he was nationally syndicated, rubbing elbows with guys like Bob Hope, you know, and all these folks, right? This was in the 40s, you know, and so Elvis, mind you, the guy that's like supposedly America's first heart throb or whatnot. Jeez, I can't talk today, guys. Must be the marijuana. Not sure.
Sure.
His first appearance wasn't until 1956. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so this guy was like, you know, the ladies' man of the era. And then that, I didn't see anything about that Los Angeles show. That's fantastic. Just shows how me and Owen both look into different things sometimes. You know, I'm going a different direction here and there and everywhere. Sorry, my friend. I hope I didn't get you off track. Hey, on a side note, Nicole was just talking to me this morning, and she's like, you need to stop talking over Owen. So I'm going to be trying better, guys.
Nobody means to. I need the same thing. So.
Yeah.
But by 1951, Cora LePan had signed with theater owner and TV producer Louis Snyder.
Nice name.
Who used clips known as telescriptions for fillers on local stations all over the country, giving Cora more national exposure.
Wow.
Then due to a dispute that he basically, Liberace just took over.
Good old Liberace.
And stole his gaze into the camera.
Yeah, but he didn't have the eyes, man. He had to wear them big old sunglasses and fake, he had the glittery piano and all that shit, right?
Most of my knowledge of Liberace comes from like old Saturday Night Live spoofs, so I can't
I don't know if I've purposely listened to a Liberace song, my friend. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I definitely bumped me some Cora LePan though. That's the real deal.
And only what's real.
I'm just saying. Sorry.
I do remember on King of Queens when Arthur is like shocked when they tell him that Liberace is gay. That was like, I remember some kid in elementary school saying like Freddie Mercury from Queen wasn't gay. And I'm like, look, it doesn't matter, but come on, man. Like,
come on, man. What was that from? Come on.
It was
man.
Like a football deal when somebody did something stupid.
Yeah. That was NFL Gruden, huh? Yeah, something like that. Nonetheless. All right. Back to Corla. Very interesting take on things, Owen. McMichael.
And so then you said he moved to San Francisco and recorded a bunch of stuff. As his fame did start to dwindle, he taught piano and was playing in supermarkets and pizza palaces, apparently. Which
Jeez.
Sounds like a wonderful place. That doesn't sound like a downgrade if you're at a pizza palace, depending on how the pizza is.
The Grand Mughal's Pizza Palace. That's probably where it was at. I don't know. I'm just saying, he was a Hindu guy, so like the Mughal Emperor was. He has a song about Mughal stuff.
Ah, gotcha.
All right, sorry, my friend. Anyway,
I did see one of his last performances was a sold out show at the very famous, apparently, Bimbo's 365 Club in San Francisco.
Fantastic. Yeah, they did call him a Bay Area prodigy. By the way, I've seen a lot of that. Because that's where he landed, kind of. That was his home.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, his home city, I guess. You know how, like me, like I'm from Montana, right? But like I moved a few times, okay? So, and I'm basically from Billings, but to me, this is home now. So I'm from the BG. I'm from Battleground, basically, or Portland or wherever. This is the PDX area. I don't know what the fuck you call it. I'm out here, guys, all right, in the BG. All right. Sorry about that.
Soggy trees
in the beach.
So Corlo, you think he was around some of Nicotina's stomping grounds? And
oh, of course,
the city.
You know, I'm very interested in something now. I may have to reach out to somebody. Mr. Biscuit Smoothie, we haven't talked about him for a while, and he's out there, and I would be shocked if he didn't bump him some Corlo Pandit. And I don't know, I'm gonna have to conversate with him about this, because I don't know. I don't want to say any more, but I got some ideas. So, all right.
Yeah, that would, with how widely talented he is musically, I'd be surprised if he didn't know who.
Right, and he's into
the Corla was.
Right, he's super into the synths and organs and all these things. Well, you know, organs.
We'll leave that one alone.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, did you know one of his sisters, Frances, was a Los Angeles actress? I guess.
I was unaware.
Yeah, or whatever the hell her name was. So, yeah, he had a sister that was out there. I'm trying to look and see. In a July 1950 issue of Billboard, as the first musical icon on video film. That's what. Oh, they lauded him. Sorry. Hold on. He, in 1950, he was lauded as the first musical icon on video and film in Billboard magazine, I feel. So that was something I had seen. There's some fun things. Liberace, you know, he did say some shit about him. He had the same sets, the same crew, the same fourth wall piercing stare. That was kind of the deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he shared a rapport, you know, and so with the crew and all that. So Corleone deemed him a bordello player who had stolen his act.
Little bitch.
And an act it was. Yeah, so there we are. But sorry to be off on some shit there, man. We're really rolling today on I Tell Stories, guys. If you forgot, you know, you may want to hit the website pitlocksupply.com and pick up a shirt. I Tell Stories for life.
Pretty please.
Yeah, you know, Owen, what do you think about that? You got them at the shop too, I feel.
Yep, got some Pitlock shirts here.
Yeah, Cold Smoke Tobacco, Billings, Montana. Or, well, I guess just Cold Smoke these days. Cut the tobacco. Good job, Owen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Corla Pandit.
And it turns out that, you know, Corla had a secret that, much like Liberace was keeping one, well, different secrets. Liberace's being much more evident, but after Corla's death in 1998, a friend of his revealed that Corla Pandit was a complete made-up persona.
What?
Yeah, he was in fact John Roland Red from St. Louis, Missouri, a light-skinned black man.
Nice.
And with the racism rampant, even on the West Coast, you know, I mean, it was worse other places, I feel,
right.
But still, it was so racist in Los Angeles that, yeah, a black man could not, even as talented as he was, wasn't going to be allowed in the white clubs, whereas this exotic Indian, you know.
Yeah.
The only exposure was these, like, stereotypical movie roles and whatever that everyone was enthralled by. This, oh, the mystic Indian man.
Right, and it was,
and,
like,
yeah, well, saying that he was a Hindu, Hindus don't wear turbans, the Sikhs do, and the Sikhs don't wear gemstones on their turbans, so that was
kind of a,
you know, nowadays you could just Google it and be like, something's amiss here, but back then,
right.
You know, hardly anyone was the wiser.
No, they didn't know much about, as they called them in that time, probably the Turk. You know, that was the common reference for anybody from India or the Arab world. They just called them the Turk.
This is rather vague. Just like,
yeah,
it's encompass like
it's a real
huge portion of the world's population. But,
yeah, it's a real thing. Yeah. You can look that up. But just, you know, and it goes Arab world. They just called all white people. I think, it was either English or Dutch at one point in time. They didn't even care. They're just like the English. You know, it could have been anybody.
And I think, you know, with him portraying an Indian man, that was far less racist than Fisher Stevens' portrayal of Ben in Short Circuit, the beloved 80s movie.
That's a wound. I hate when that gets opened up. I love that movie. That was like one of my favorite movies as a child.
I saw it in the theater, and I remember when you think Johnny Five is dead, not to, if I'm spoiling this, some 40 years later almost, and I'm sorry. But crying, you know, and then being so relieved when Johnny Five is alive.
Yeah.
But yeah, Cole had just watched that, and we were discussing it, and so I thought, like, oh, you know, we were talking about what a funny character Ben was.
Yeah.
Ben, and then I looked at the cast, and it's a white man. I thought, I saw Fisher Stevens. I know I've seen him. And I was just like, Colt, dude, Ben was white.
Oh, they spray painted
him. And Colt was just like, no, I just watched it. Like, what did they do, paint him? And I'm like, apparently, yes. Like,
damn. They gave him the Cleopatra.
Yeah, we were alive in such, like, you know, casual racist time.
Yeah, yeah, that was a thing. Hey, you know, also, Balky was the original guy that was going to play Ben's kid. Ben, obviously.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
He got the Perfect Strangers gig and the world was forever changed.
Yes, which is also, he's not like some weird European guy. He's just some American. So these are two guys playing other races, I guess. I don't even know. Whatever. Let's not get into this. It makes me upset, Owen.
Steven Seagal once met the guy who played Balky from Perfect Strangers.
Oh, for real? That's pretty odd. They have pictures together?
Yeah. I don't know.
They shared recipes. Do you think Steven Seagal can cook?
Hot dogs.
Yeah, at best. From a gas station. Yeah.
Yeah.
Steven Seagal. Anyway, nonetheless. Man, Corla Panda, dude, I'm telling you guys out there, you should look him up, though. His music was pretty amazing. I can't believe he has his little plays on stuff like Spotify as he actually did. I was like, whoa. Because it is, it's, the sound is unique. There's no really getting around that. And it's a shitty thing. You know, wasn't he, didn't he, when he first tried his way into Hollywood there, he was, pretended to be Mexican, correct?
Yeah, he went as Juan Rolando, among other things, but that's, I mean, that isn't catchy.
Yeah, Juan Rolando. Yeah, half Mexican Charles. That's what he should have been.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just amazing that he lived, I forget who, somebody, one of his friends, I believe, was basically saying that he really turned into that. You know, he was so desperate to have his talents known and to get to do what he loved to do.
Yeah.
That he, you know, he's never revealed to anyone, really, that, I mean, obviously the one friend who put a secret out there probably just thinking, like, hey, this needs to be exposed. Is like, this is right. Sad that this guy had to, like,
do this,
not be himself to do what he loved. But still, that he pulled it off, that's great.
And pretty amazing.
And, like, he lived a pretty cool life that just...
Right. Very confusing.
Wasn't entirely his.
Yeah, and nowadays, you know, they would... I don't know if they would throw cultural appropriation at this nowadays because, I mean, if you got to look at the times, like, you know, black people, like, couldn't vote or do anything, guys. Like, you know, it was not, they were free, right? But, like, not really. So, anyway, it was a pretty fucked up era. And so I do understand what this guy was doing. And I was thinking about things and what you said and how I brought up his Mexican thing he did where he was trying to be Rolando or whatnot, Juan Rolando. And I feel like that the change of his name because it was had to coincide with like the Zoot Suit riots and stuff like that. And when I looked it up, it's really in the same time frame of when he would have done that because that happened in 1943, and there had been a lot of Mexican tension for about 10 years or so at that point. So it all kind of like makes sense why he would have switched from that to an Indian guy. And then nobody knew shit. It was pretty smart because nobody knew anything about India. They just knew they dressed kind of like what he was doing and they had elephants probably, shit like that, you know, cobras, whatnot.
Curry had not taken the nation by storm either, unfortunately, because curry is delicious.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's really hot.
Here, and then his kids, he had two kids. So you were speaking of how deep he was into this in his life. He named his daughter Shari, and then his son initially was Karam, but he later changed his name to John. So,
huh.
Yeah, because he's probably like, well, I'm not Indian, guys, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. You know, I don't blame him, I do feel like this guy did the best thing he could do. I don't know. I have no fucking problem with it. I think it's amazing. And I don't even
know. Yeah, no, what I have a problem with is that he was forced to do it,
yeah,
you know, that he couldn't just be...
Who he was.
John Red. He had to.
Right.
So, but no, it's amazing that he pulled it off and, you know, that he did get to live the way he wanted to live. It just was under false pretenses.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. I don't think I've ever heard somebody play the organ like that. And I listened to a lot of different music. I would have to say that when they labeled him a prodigy, they're on point. This guy was, like, pretty amazing. So. It's sad that was that way, but it makes for an interesting story, correct?
Absolutely, yeah.
And here
I did see that he was born into music. You know, his actual father was a Baptist minister.
Right, yes.
And he was one of seven children. His mother was Creole ancestry. And relatives said that at age three, he could hear a song and then just play it back.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So he was definitely a prodigy.
Yes.
You know, it was like, this is something that's like...
That's amazing.
Just
ingrained
in him, so...
I wish I
thankfully,
could.
Thankfully... Yeah, I don't know.
God knows what I'd be up to.
I can make a good quesadilla.
Yeah. Yep. That's, I can do some fry bread. Hey. Yeah. Fry bread's fantastic. What was I thinking of, Owen McMichael? I'm not sure. The only thing that I know right now is that Corla Pandit was amazing. I'm glad that we were able to tell this story here on I Tell Stories. And there is a saying that basically says, you know, like, or it's an old Chinese thing, I feel. And it's like, I don't know if it's like a blessing or whatever. You take this how it is, and I'll tell you what I think it means. And it's like, I hope you live in interesting times. Right? And, like, you know, everybody wants to live in interesting times, but typically interesting times are terrible. So, you know, like, there's bad, like, and, you know, there's a lot of bad shit that happens. Like, technically, you know, COVID, that was interesting times, guys. You know, war, all these things. But that's where these amazing fucking stories come from. Because nobody's as impressed with people if they're, like, you know, rich and or middle class and they play the violin well. You know, only people that really care about that shit are the rich people. Right? I mean, typically. So, but stories like this are amazing. And, like, also, when you get forced to do shit certain ways and you have to, like, morph yourself and really just try hard at all these things, it can produce amazing shit like that. Because, you know, he's already a prodigy, but then he had to really probably, I don't even know. Who knows? I wonder, he must not have had any, like, anxiety issues. Because, you know, a lot of times these people like this have, like, slight autism. Right, they're on the spectrum somehow, which one way or the other, and then they'll have these, like, you know, a lot of them have anxiety issues or hard times with people, but it does not seem like this guy had any of that shit. You know, he got right in on it.
Yeah, he seemed like he was enjoying himself from, like, all the footage I saw and everything, and yeah, sounds like he lived it up.
Apparently, there's a Corla Pandit movie that I missed until. I was just looking at my fucking phone when I remembered I needed to look at his kids' names, you know, and then there it was. But, hey, there was another story that I just randomly seen, just so you understand that this isn't totally, like, uncommon for these times. There was a guy in New York, his name was Theopolis McKee, who he was really light-skinned, and he became a lawyer. He chose to live his life as a white man, like, till he was, like, 67, until he stepped forward to claim a huge inheritance as the only colored descendant of a Negro Civil War veteran. So, Colonel John McKee. So, basically, like, this became a big deal. His claim in the court fight with his biracial siblings made national news, it says. So, this guy, like, lived as a white guy to survive, or it was his life choice. But I read these stories, and it was kind of a weird thing. And then we talked about, like, William Craft and all that story, you know, and Ellen, and how, you know, that's how they got, is because she was so fair-skinned and everything and pretended to be white and all this shit. And that was also, like, later on in the 40s, because the prejudice was so bad still, that if people were, God, fortunate enough to be light-skinned, right, they could fake it a little bit, and they would basically, there's a book about it I seen, I didn't read it, but I seen it, and it was, they would choose, like, a life of solitude, basically. Because in order to do so, you had to cut off all your family, which was black, right? Or whatever. And then you choose to live this white life and change your name and all this shit. Insane, huh?
Wow.
Can you imagine that? It's far more common than you think. I bet you, if we were to dig and wanted to do, like, a really sad show, guys, we could find a lot of them. Thank God Corla Pandit turned this turd into a diamond somehow.
Bling.
Hardcore motherfucker, yeah. You know. So, but man, good story, bro. I've never heard of him. I won't lie, I was bullshitting at the beginning. I'd never heard of him, or a Corla Pandit, period, until Owen brought him up, and I was like, God damn it, Owen, you always find these good gems.
Hey, I'm just reporting on people that did awesome stuff.
Well, you're a fine journalist, okay? You know, you dig, you find the truth. I've had to recant some things on this show before. I've never once heard you have to do so, even when you were...
Well, I may just not know of my ignorance.
I know. I know. Yeah, I know. I think you may have started some beef with Finland. I don't know.
Totally unintentional, by the way. I was saying, like, I'm thinking Finland's awesome, and I just don't want a bunch of nitwit American tourists over there. Like, I'm sure the women are gorgeous, and the food's, you know, I like fresh fish, so they've got to have that.
All right, yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, I was just really saying, like, I'm sure Finland's kind of like, yeah, we're boring, stay away, like, stay in the Mall of America, like, right. Don't bring your shit over here.
We're gonna drink in the forest, yeah, right. apparently that's what they're all about, is woods and forest. Yeah, well, hey, there you go. I'm glad you got your opportunity to clarify that a little bit better. Here on I Tell Stories, we do not hate Finland. Okay, guys?
No, not at all. I'd like to visit someday if they'll have me here. Now they're going to take my advice and be like, yes, yeah, stay out, Americans.
Right. Yeah, I know. No, don't do that. We like you guys. We love Finland. Serbia, Finland, all you countries that are shouting out left and right here and there. Kenya, give us another one, Owen.
Republic of Congo.
All right. That's cool.
Uganda.
Yeah, Panama.
One of the only places that's actually in both hemispheres.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's not that big of a country.
Whoa. You dang, bro. Malta. What up, Malta? Maltese. Shout out. Yeah. Sometimes we just like
Sardinia.
Sardinia. Whoa. Hey, I can't remember what my favorite flag was from the Flag Day episode. You guys should check that shit out. It was kind of funny, actually. It was a great episode, you know.
Oh, so. Boy. Flag Day is only a couple months away.
Yeah. We might have to do part two. Oh, no. Let's not. All right.
Yeah, we'll leave it at one.
All right. We fall astray very quickly, my friend. Anyway, I think everybody out there should have a great day, evening, whatever. Check us out, pitlocksupply.com. Hit us up on Instagram. We'd love for people to message us. You know, it's cool. You know what I'm saying? Owen's got his shop there in Billings, Montana. Cold Smoke. You can stop in there and check him out in person, live in the flesh. All right, everybody. Hope you have a good day, evening.
Much love, everybody.
Hey, that was interesting.
Yeah.